For an early dinner, he was whisked away to Mortimer's, the current power place to be seen, just down Pennsylvania, where he met Elaine Tyner, the lawyer running DPAC. Over fruit and cottage cheese, she laid out the current financials of the newest PAC on the block. Cash in hand of $29 million, no significant debt. Money being churned around the clock, coming in from all directions, from everywhere in the world. Spending it was the challenge. Since it was considered soft money, or money that couldn't go directly to the late campaign, it had to be used elsewhere. Tyner had several targets. The first was a series of generic ads similar to the doomsday ads Teddy had put together. DPAC was already buying primetime spots for the fall. The second, and by far the most enjoyable, were the Senate and congressional races. "They're lining up like ants," she said with great amusement. "It's amazing what a few million bucks can do." She told the story of a House race in a district in Northern California where the incumbent, a 20-year veteran Lake knew and despised, started the year with a 40-point lead against an unknown challenger. The unknown found his way to DPAC and surrendered his soul to Aaron Lake. "We've basically taken over his campaign," she said. "We're writing speeches, polling, doing all his print and TV ads. We've even hired a new staff for him. So far, we've spent $1.5 million, and our boy has cut the lead to 10 points, and we have 7 months to go." In all, Tyner and DPAC were meddling in 30 House races and 10 in the Senate. She expected to raise a total of $60 million and spend every dime of it by November. Her third area of focus was taking the pulse of the country. DPAC was polling nonstop every day, 15 hours a day. If labor in western Pennsylvania was bothered by an issue, DPAC would know it. If the Hispanics in Houston were pleased with a new welfare policy, DPAC would know it. If the women in Greater Chicago liked or disliked the Lake ad, DPAC knew yes or no and by what percentage. "We know everything," she boasted. "We're like Big Brother, always watching." The polling cost $60,000 a day, a bargain. No one could touch it. For the important matters, Lake was 9 points ahead of Terry in Texas, even in Florida, a state Lake had yet to visit, and very close in Indiana, Terry's home state. "Terry's tired," she said. "Morale is low because he won in New Hampshire and the money was rolling in. Then you came from nowhere. A fresh face, no baggage, new message. You start winning, and suddenly the money finds you. Terry can't raise 50 bucks at a church bake sale. He's losing key people because he can't pay them, and because they smell another winner." Lake chewed a piece of pineapple and savored the words. They weren't new. He'd heard them from his own people. But coming from a seasoned insider like Tyner, they were even more reassuring. "What are the vice president's numbers?" Lake asked. He had his own set, but for some reason trusted her more. "He'll squeak out the nomination," she said, offering nothing new. "But the convention will be bloody. Right now, you're only a few points behind him on the big question. Who will you vote for in November?" "November is far away." "It is, and it isn't." "A lot can change," Lake said, thinking of Teddy, and wondering what sort of a crisis he'd create to terrify the American people. The dinner was more of a snack, and from Mortimer's, Lake was driven to a small dining room at the Hay Adams Hotel. It was a long, late dinner with friends, 24 of his colleagues from the House. Few of them had rushed to endorse him when he'd entered the race, but now they were all wildly enthusiastic about their man. Most had their own pollsters. The bandwagon was rolling down the mountain. Lake had never seen his old pals so happy to be around him. The letter was prepared in documents by a woman named Bruce, one of the agency's three best counterfeiters. Tacked to the corkboard, just above the work table in her small lab, were letters written by Ricky. Excellent samples, much more than she needed. She had no idea who Ricky was, but there was no doubt his handwriting was contrived. It was fairly consistent with the more recent samples, clearly showing an ease that came only with practice. His vocabulary was not remarkable, but then she suspected he was trying to downplay it. His sentence structure showed few mistakes.